Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.
Garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yes, we did. We started to burn many things we found. That's a wonderful, beautiful, thrilling Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger, David Burns, and the Rivertown Kids. We're back for another Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Hour. This is Harvey Wasserman, your host. We're talking today with Joe Mangano. Joseph Mangano has been a guest at our show before. Joe, you're with us?
I'm here. Hi, Harvey.
How are you, Joe?
Thanks
for having
me.
We had a fundraiser in New York City this past week with some stellar guests, including Alec Baldwin, who is really exactly as advertised, a very interesting, powerful, and charismatic guy, I would say, about Alec Baldwin. It was really fun to meet him. So thank you, Joe, for inviting me to that.
So glad you could join us, Harvey. You were charismatic, too.
Well, we had a time at a nice Mexican restaurant. I always thought in this country anyway that fancy and Mexican restaurant were not come in the same breath. But I guess that it was a beautiful place, and I was really glad and privileged and honored to be there. So thank you, Joe Mangano. You run the Radiation Health Project, and we have some very, very serious business to talk about today, which is the health impacts of radiation from nuclear power plants, but especially now from Fukushima. And you have made some pretty powerful assertions, really cut to the heart of the future of atomic energy. So can you tell us, just to get us going here, what does your research tell us about the impact of the Fukushima nuclear accident on the health of the people in Japan to start with, and in particular on children nearby?
Well, the research that I and my colleagues in the group have done really have not examined the Japanese in particular. We are act because of the great difficulty of obtaining data on disease and death rates in Japan, and because, quite honestly, of the skepticism many people have about how accurate they are. The Japanese government has not been very forthcoming with good information.
Well, that's an understatement. That's a kind statement. I mean, not only have they not been forthcoming, but they've put out a State Secrets Act that can put people in prison for revealing certain data, including data about the health effects of nuclear power. So, that's pretty powerful stuff.
Well, it is powerful, Harvey. But what we did instead is went to Plan B. Instead of looking at Japan, we looked at the United States. Now, I'm sure some of your listeners know, and maybe some don't, that the meltdown at Fukushima 3 years ago, of course, affected Japan quite terribly. However, the radiation did not stop. There is no lead wall around the island of Japan. These deadly gases and particles kept moving with the prevailing winds all across the Pacific Ocean, and it got to the United States West Coast within 5 days and kept going until it completely encircle the northern hemisphere. So what we're doing is taking a look at any changes in the in the health of Americans, even though Americans got a much lower dose than did the Japanese. We do know that radiation is radiation. No matter what the dose, there is a health risk. And there's no greater health risk than to the very youngest, the fetus and the infant. Here's what we found so far. Number one, on the West Coast, which got hit the hardest of anywhere in the U.S., the rate of babies born with underactive thyroid glands, known as hypothyroidism, went up 17% compared to the rest of the country in the 9 months after Fukushima. You know, these are children who were in the womb when the radiation hit. And we've just now uncovered and are working on another article that there was a similar 17% increase in the rate of certain birth defects. There are five of them, spina bifida, Down syndrome, anencephalus, which is a small head. It's a very deadly one. Omphalocele, and missing one, cleft palates. So that is what we have found so far. We also did a study when the very first estimated data came out that in the first 4 months after Fukushima, there was a bump in the number of reported deaths. Again, these are estimates based on a 23% sample. But it comes out to about 14,000, we'll call excess deaths, which was about the same as what happened after the Chernobyl meltdown in 1986 and the 4 months after. I think it was around 15,000.
This is in the United States?
In the whole United States, all ages. Now, we're looking for final data, which should be available any minute, and we can really tell whether it was higher on the West Coast or higher among infants and so on. But that is what we've come up so far. These raise red flags because there are those who say that, you know, below a certain dose, there is no harm from radiation. And that is absolutely patently false and highly unscientific. And we can also, these are also important because if we find that Americans are being harmed from Fukushima, we can only imagine what the toll will be among the Japanese people, especially those closest to Fukushima.
Well, one thing we do know, Joe Mangano, is that the wind in general from Fukushima does blow out to sea. So, you know, the Japanese, obviously, we're still not getting anywhere near as much as they would in Japan, but the radiation from Fukushima in general has blown towards the United States, which is, what, 4,000 or 5,000 miles away. But nonetheless, thankfully, in many ways, the radiation did not blow directly into Tokyo, a city of, what, 15 million people.
That's right, although the winds do swirl, Harvey. It's not like Tokyo got zero exposure from Fukushima. It got some, and it certainly got plenty more than the United States, but not nearly what it was near Fukushima.
Right, and but nonetheless, plenty of it did go into Tokyo as well as come across the Pacific. But one thing that we need to mention, which you're familiar with, which our listeners need to hear, is that radiation does not uniformly disperse in a nice, even pattern after a nuclear meltdown. We especially saw this at Three Mile Island and at Chernobyl. It does tend to come down in clumps, and God forbid you should be, you know, in the path of one of these clumps. Even though the average dose over a large area is going to be relatively small and allegedly not harmful, if you're in a clump area, you're going to get seriously dosed and you're going to have health effects. There's just no doubt about that.
That's right.
So your conclusion then is that the radiation that blew across the Pacific Ocean from Fukushima has caused some 14,000 excess deaths in the United States?
May have contributed to. We have to look closer at any possible other factors behind this. However, the fact that it did occur and the fact that the same thing happened after Chernobyl raises another big red flag. I mean, and it's not just fetuses and infants that are especially susceptible to radiation. It's the very elderly who have fairly immune systems. It's the people who have immune system related problems. They are much less likely to be able to fight off the harmful effects of exposure from these radioactive particles and gases. So we think we don't know what we'll find, but we're eager to see whether our prediction, how well our prediction holds up.
Well, okay, and then what about infant death rates and things like that?
That'll be part of it. That'll be part of it. Oh, we do know already that the infant death rates in the West Coast states, instead of declining, which typically they do, they seem to have, from 2010 to 2011, they seem to have leveled off and even gone up a bit. Again, we want to find out month by month, what the changes were and what states and so on. But I can only speak tentatively, but it's certainly something that should be done. It's certainly something. The key here, Harvey, is that historically, after a meltdown, there has been a rush to judgment, in where officials say there's no harm from nuclear reactors, or no harm from the
accidents.
Meltdown. As a matter of fact, I'll even quote the United Nations group. It's called UNSCEAR, United Nations Scientific Committee on the Effects of Ionizing Radiation. In 2013, they put out a statement. It's just hard to believe. No discernible increased incidence of radiation health effects are expected among exposed members. In other words, Fukushima didn't harm anybody. Now, that's absolutely ludicrous. We have, I'm sure we'll be talking about this, we have evidence from prior meltdowns, places like Three Mile Island and Chernobyl, that there was quite a lengthy toll, quite a lot of suffering caused. So for a UN group like this to say that is really a terrible thing to lie, to foist among the people, not just of Japan, but of the world.
It is awful. So now, you have since asserted, let's switch our focus now to Japan and to the children around Fukushima. You have since asserted that there is a very serious outbreak of thyroid cancer among children living near Fukushima. Now, this, of course, is flat out denied by the entire nuclear industry and, as you've said, by the United Nations, which says that no one has been or will be harmed by Fukushima. You now have asserted, well, tell us what you've asserted about children being harmed near Fukushima.
Well, Harvey, as difficult as the Japanese government has been to deal with and getting good health information, there is one study that it is supporting, and that is a study by the Fukushima Medical University of thyroid glands among about 250,000 children under 18 years old living near Fukushima. Now, remember, there's nothing magical about the thyroid gland. Radiation harms every organ, digestive, respiratory, circulatory, cancers, birth defects, and so on. But the thyroid gland is considered especially sensitive. Of the mix of 100-plus chemicals in the radiation from a nuclear reactor, one of them is iodine. And iodine has a special mission. When it enters the body, it's immediately, through eating and drinking, and breathing, it immediately goes from the stomach into the bloodstream and attaches to the thyroid gland, where it kills or harms cells. And we know that iodine is especially harmful, of course, to the very young. So the Fukushima Medical University is now looking at thyroid glands.
Now, the Fukushima Medical University, is that a state institution or is it a private university?
It's a private university, but it's getting its funds from the government.
Okay.
And what they've found so far is this. They're doing ultrasounds on all these kids, and they're following up with any suspected problems with biopsies. There's been two findings so far, and this is the latest information is current. It's from last month. So far, 130 children have thyroid cancer. 50 are confirmed, 80 are suspected, and I'm positive that virtually all of these will become actual cancers. So 130. That may not sound like a lot, but you have to remember thyroid cancer in children is extremely rare. Extremely rare. In fact, a group that size over the last 3 years should have had about three and a half cases of thyroid cancer. Instead, we have 130 and going up rapidly. The second thing they found out is that 46% of these kids have a cyst or a nodule that they detected on their thyroid gland. These aren't cancerous yet. They're benign, but they're considered precancerous. Some, in fact, maybe many, will eventually become cancers. The number 46% is extremely high. Once again, a cyst or a nodule on a thyroid gland in a child is a rarity. And to have almost half, and the number is going up, almost half the children with it is extremely disturbing.
Well, how old are these? What's the age range of these people who are called children?
They're all under 18 years old, Harvey.
Okay. And so and does this include children that have been born since the accident, or was it just kids? Well,
no.
Who does it include?
No, to my knowledge. They when they started this soon after the meltdown in 2011, they selected the population and began to work on them, I believe. It's hard
okay.
to, again, it's hard to get information. The other thing I should add to this, I mean, these are disturbing things, but the Fukushima Medical University has concluded that despite these two very high numbers, there is no link from between the meltdown and these thyroid problems.
Right, they always say that. That's the standard. You know, there's a tape recording somewhere in nuclear headquarters, and that says nobody has been harmed, nobody will be harmed, there's no meltdown. So we're talking about a quarter of a million people under the age of 18,
right,
who are almost half of whom are showing thyroid abnormalities.
That's right. And the number, every 6 months, the number seems to grow.
Well, do you have a progression of numbers developed since the accident?
Yeah, in the last, they put out results every 6 months. As I recall, the last three have been something like 35%, 41%, and now 46%.
It would be interesting to see that progression.
Mid-2013, late 2013, and then last month. So there's no signs of slowing down.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very disturbing. It's not that different from what we saw at Chernobyl. It's actually worse than Chernobyl, because the thyroid cancers in Chernobyl did not start skyrocketing until 4 years had passed after the meltdown. It's radiation works on a lag basis. It's not that, you know, you're exposed one day and then next week you have thyroid cancer. No, there's usually a lag. Sometimes in adults it can be years, decades. It was 4 years for Chernobyl, but here in Fukushima, it was really just a year or so that these numbers began to jump.
Wow,
that's quite disturbing, Harvey. We're just beginning the research here about how many people were harmed from this terrible meltdown. This is just the beginning, but the starting numbers are not looking good at all.
We're talking with Joe Mangano, executive director of the Radiation Health Project, the only group in the United States, and one of the very, very few, I mean, you know, less than five, that seriously looks at the radiation and the health impacts from radiation from nuclear power plants and from atomic accidents. And what you're saying, Joe, is, now tell us again, How much higher than expected is the thyroid cancer rate among the quarter million children who are being studied around Fukushima?
So far about 40 times higher. Not 40% higher, 40 times higher, which is 4,000%. Again, 130 cases compared to...
How many kids with thyroid cancer out of how many kids studied?
I'm sorry, Harvey?
How many children have thyroid cancer in the sample of how many children that are being studied?
130.
Out of how many?
Out of 250,000.
And how many would you expect?
Three.
Under normal circumstances?
Three, just over three. If you divide 130 over three or three and a quarter, you're going to get about 40 times greater, which is not 40% greater, but 40 times, which is 4,000% greater.
And then of this, you say it's 250,000 that are being studied, 250,000 kids.
Approximately, yeah.
And of those 250,000 kids, 46% have thyroid abnormalities.
That's right. Some sort of a growth, some sort of a mass on their thyroid. They call them cysts or nodules. They're not cancerous, at least not yet, but, you know, these are young children. I mean,
right.
In most parts of the world, in all parts of the world, very, very few kids have any sort of a growth on their thyroid glands.
Well, it's a precancerous situation.
That's correct.
So, and then out of these 250,000, of which 46% have thyroid abnormalities, under normal circumstances, how many would you, what percentage would you expect to have thyroid abnormalities?
Normally?
Yeah.
I would say less than 1%, you know, something down there.
So,
there's your 40 times again, 46% versus 1%. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's.
So 46% of 250,000 is about 100. It's over 100,000 kids.
Oh yeah, 120,000 or something. Yeah.
And what percentage of these would you expect to get cancer?
That's a very good question. I don't think we have any sort of a prototype study on how many children who have these precancerous growths will eventually develop cancer. I don't know the answer to that. It won't be everyone, but it's not going to be rare either, especially because they were so badly exposed.
Now, let's talk, well, that's, you know, I have to have that sink in, for God's sake. So we're talking about, and this is just within what kind of radius from Fukushima?
I think it's just several prefectures, or what the Japanese call, use the name for counties, in the area. I think it's about five prefectures, I think.
God.
So say within, I don't know, 30 miles or so, something, 30, 40 miles, something in that neighborhood.
Now, how does this compare to data that comes from Chernobyl and Three Mile Island?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because, first of all, Fukushima, although it may be the worst meltdown, is certainly not the first. There's actually a long, if I can really go back and just for a minute here, so that people out there don't think there have been just three meltdowns in history. There's been a long history of meltdowns in the nuclear era, you know, after World War II. The very first one was in 1952 in Canada, a place called Chalk River. They actually had two of them. They also had another one in 1958. These are small research reactors. In Idaho, the government was U.S. government was working on this special breeder reactor. There were two meltdowns, one in 1955 and another was in 1961. It was a blast that you know, an explosion which killed three workers. One of them was impaled with a rod, a long metal rod, into the roof of the building. There were others. There was one near Pittsburgh in 1960. There was one in 1966, just outside Detroit, a reactor called Fermi 1.
Right. I was at the University of Michigan at the time and never heard about it until 7 years later, but
well,
that's okay.
It wouldn't have been good news had you heard it, Harvey. It was, it came very close to a meltdown. It was a sodium-cooled reactor. Instead of being cooled by water, it was being cooled by sodium. It was still kind of experimental. And the sodium came very, very close to meeting air. And in simple terms, when sodium meets air, it's big trouble. That reactor would have exploded. There was a book written called We Almost Lost Detroit, which about this. It was way too close to call. The reactor closed in a couple of years. And then there was one which also was a secret. In 1959, the government commissioned this company, Atomics International, to build 10 reactors just outside Los Angeles, about 30 miles outside downtown L.A. The plant was called Santa Susana, and one of these reactors was, again, using, like the one in Detroit, using sodium to cool it. And in July 1959, very quickly, there was over a two-week period, there was a leak, an explosion. There was a huge deliberate release of radiation. It was kept quiet for over 20 years, and although no one is quite sure how much was released, some people think this might have been the worst reactor in a meltdown in American history, worse than Three Mile Island, perhaps far worse. And the fact it was so close to a big city like Los Angeles is just a terrible thing. So the meltdowns were not a surprise when we get to 1979, and that is Three Mile Island, which was a brand new nuclear reactor near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. It had a partial meltdown, not a complete one. It was a large new reactor, sort of the state of the art at the time, and as many Americans will remember, it was a very scary thing. There was the governor, although after waiting 2 days, suggested that all pregnant women and children under 5 evacuate the area. There was a panic for people leaving, and there have been, well, ever since then, there's been a battle that over how many people were harmed.
Well, now let's talk about that battle, because I went into central Pennsylvania in the year after the accident, and I interviewed people, and my clear discovery was that, first of all, the infant death rate in central Pennsylvania tripled in the 3 months after the accident, at least in Harrisburg, relative to the same period of time over the previous 2 years, and that in the wake of the accident, research by Dr. Ernest Sternglass and Jay Gould and yourself indicated some serious health impacts. So can you talk to us about the health impacts that followed the Three Mile Island accident relative to what you're seeing at Fukushima?
Yeah, we'll start with step one, Harvey, and that is the almost immediate publication by Dr. Arthur Upton, who was the head of the National Cancer Institute, who predicted that Three Mile Island would cause an additional 0.7 cases of cancer. not even a full case of cancer.
Well, right? But he did say there would be some impact, and I have to say that we now have a study, a report that comes out of Canada, that's they're talking about doing a restart in Canada, and the Canadian officials there, I've posted the study at nukefree.org, and they are conceding that there will be some cancer, actually specifically thyroid cancer among children, with the result of the opening of the nuclear plant. But they're also saying that this can be dealt with by giving out iodine, potassium iodide tablets, and taking other precautions.
Well, that's the thing you have to watch for.
This is an acknowledgement from the nuclear establishment that this is a possible outcome.
Well, that's a big step, Harvey, although it did take 35 years. The problem with doing thyroid studies, there's nothing wrong with looking at the thyroid. It's certainly very sensitive, but you don't want people to think that only one gland of the body is harmed, especially the thyroid. I mean, when you're talking about thyroid cancer, it's not one of the more common cancers, and it is one of the more treatable cancers. The survival rate is quite high. But we don't ever let it be said that the radiation impact is only the thyroid gland. In fact, to continue with
Joe, let's hold on. We're at 30 on the hour.
All right,
let's take a short break. We're talking with Joe Mangano of the Radiation Health Project. We're going to break for 3 minutes. We'll listen to my good buddy Dana Lyons sing the Solartopia Rocky Top version. And Joe will be back in 3 minutes.
Okay.
Thanks.
Coal plants, new plants, oil refineries, pipelines, mega dams. Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan. Oil spill, meltdown, flooding, suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam. Road rage, asthma, famine, leukemia, it's time to get a better plan. Solartopia is home sweet home to me. Solartopia, that's the future for me. Green powered energy, windmills, hydrogen, photovoltaic cells with solar panels everywhere. Solar cars, fast trains, bicycles, hydroplanes, get you home in under an hour. Clean air, water, rooftop gardens, tidal geothermal power. Family, community, healthy children, and lots of forest for the bear. Solartopia is home sweet home to me. Solartopia, green powered energy, that's the future for me. Solartopia is home sweet home to me. Solartopia, that's the future for me. Green powered energy.
That's the great Dana Lyons singing his heart out here. This is Harvey Washman. We're back with the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We are talking to Joe Mangano, the executive director of the Radiation Health Project. Joe, are you with us?
I'm here.
Okay, so what I want to do in this this next half hour is compare the health impacts that we know about with between Three Mile Island, Fukushima, and Chernobyl. I want to bring up the Physicians for Social Responsibility in conjunction with the German chapter of the International Physicians Against Nuclear War have come up with 10 major points about the recent report by the United Nations Scientific Committee on the Effects of Atomic Radiation. The UNSCEAR report, 2013 it was, said that there are no health effects from Fukushima. It's an astonishing assertion. And I do want to pay tribute to the plant manager at Fukushima. No one else on Earth has saved more lives than the plant manager of Fukushima, whose name I hesitate to do it because I always butcher it. It's a Japanese name, but he knows who he is. And actually, TEPCO, which owns Fukushima, advised evacuating the plant, and he refused. He stayed there and probably saved millions of lives and since died of esophageal cancer. So, you know, this man, whose name I hesitate to pronounce, is one of the great heroes of all world history. And I want to take my hat off to him. But he did die of esophageal cancer. And here are the 10 points that have been raised now by PSR and IPPNW, the German chapter, about the UNSCEAR report exonerating Fukushima. It was mainly the direction of the wind that prevented a larger catastrophe in Japan. Now, we've talked about that, Joe. Mangano, the wind did not thankfully blow to Tokyo. Unfortunately, it blew towards California. But at least California was further away. The nuclear catastrophe is ongoing and continues to be a source of radiation emissions. Estimates of radiation emissions and exposure should be based on neutral sources. Now, we're getting the estimates of radiation exposure from TEPCO and the Japanese government, neither of which are neutral at all in this situation. The endorsement of Fukushima produce, that means food, increases the risk of radioactive exposure. The Japanese government has been advising people in Japan to go ahead and eat the food from the Fukushima area as if there's no problem, which is, you know, horrific, a terrible thing to do. And according to the PSR, there is definite risk of increased cancer as a result of eating contaminated food. Whole body counters underestimate the extent of radiation exposures. TEPCO's employee dose assessments cannot be relied on. Now, one thing that's true is that the workers at the site at Fukushima are not all employed by TEPCO. Many of them are employed by contractors who do no radiation monitoring on these people. The special vulnerability of the embryo has to be taken into account in regards to radiation. We'll talk about that in a minute. Thyroid malignancies and other cancers have to be monitored for several decades. So, Joe, as you've pointed out, the thyroid abnormality rate among the children in the area has been rising, and we expect it to continue to rise. Clearly, it's going to go over 50% among these 250,000 kids if it's already at 46 after 3 years. Monitoring should also occur for non-cancer diseases and genetic radiation effects. And finally, comparisons between nuclear fallout and background radiation are misleading. So all of these, as of August 20th, 2013, 18 children in Fukushima were confirmed to have thyroid cancer, and 25 more have suspect biopsies. Now, what you're saying, Joe, is that the number is now over 100?
Yeah, instead of 18 and, 34, it's now 50 and 80, total 130.
So 50 confirmed thyroid cancers and 80 suspect.
Yeah, which are highly likely to be confirmed.
And then another 120,000 or so of children who have abnormalities that are almost, well, I would say highly likely to turn into malignancies, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. And remember, they skipped a couple of steps by doing this study. I mean, it's fine that it's being done, and the results are horrifying, but what about infants who died within the first year or first month of life? What about those who are born prematurely, born underweight? What about those who miscarried or stillborn?
In those cases, we do have some numbers from Three Mile Island and from Chernobyl. Can you talk about that?
We do. Three Mile Island, the infant deaths in the first 2 years after the accident, the Dauphin County, Pennsylvania, which is where the stricken plant was located.
Right. That's D-A-U-P-H-I-N. It's not the sea mammal. It's D-A-U.
Right, not dolphin.
Yeah,
dolphin.
Thank
you.
Dolphin.
The infant death rate went up 53% in the first 2 years. The childhood cancer rate also increased in the several counties nearby in the next few years. Maybe worse than that, The first study ever published that ever looked at all cancers in the area within 10 miles of the plant, it took 12 years after the accident, after the meltdown, to be printed. By then, 31 articles had been published in the Journal of Psychosomatic Medicine, in the Journal of Stress, the Journal of Psychology, all about the mental issues related to living through a meltdown. Finally, a group from Columbia University puts out a report, and they found that in the first 5 years after the meltdown, compared to the previous five, in the 10-mile radius near Three Mile Island, the number of cancer cases went up 64% from 1722 to 2831. 64%. That's almost doubled in the first 5 years. That's outrageous. And unfortunately, the team from Colombia concluded that there was no link between the accident and cancer, and suggested that higher levels of cancer might be instead due to stress and what stress does to the body. Very
well. This is cancer among whom?
Cancer among everybody. People of all ages. All
in Dauphin County.
Right. Old people, middle-aged people, children.
And in how long a period after the accident?
5 years, 1981 to 85.
Compared 81, to... so 2 years. So the accident was in 79.
79.
And then they looked at the numbers in 81 to 85.
That's right, and compared with 75 to 79, the before period.
Now, this would have to be fast-occurring cancers because, you know, the common wisdom is the cancer takes a long period of time.
It does, Harvey, but there's been discussion about that. First of all, among children and younger people, it may come on quite fast. Number two, there are people who are, let's call them, not diagnosed with cancer, but sort of borderline, you know, that they are in danger of cancer. Add a large dose of radiation to it, and that process may well be speeded up.
Okay.
So,
all right.
So whatever happened, this is a highly unusual thing. In 5 years, in a normal situation, you might see the rate go up 5% or not at all.
Now, does this include thyroid cancers among children?
Yes.
Do you have specific numbers on thyroid cancers among children at Three Mile Island?
Yeah, that's a small part of it, though.
Okay, but do you have any comparable numbers from Three Mile Island childhood cancers to compare with Fukushima and Chernobyl?
Yeah, part of that article looked at people age 0 to 24, and they also looked at, I think, lung cancer, leukemia, and lymphoma, and all had high increases. All about the same, actually.
And you did this study? RHP did this?
No. This was Columbia University.
Oh, okay.
And it was published in two articles, American Journal of Public Health and Journal of Epidemiology. Again, the data were stunning, but it was troubling that they came to a conclusion that there was no link until a group from the University of North Carolina took the same data and did their own analysis, published their own article, and said, no, Columbia, you guys are wrong. There is a link. And it's a serious one. And a fight literally broke out in the journals where the people from Columbia accused the North Carolina people of being dishonest and playing on people's fears. The UNC people, you know, volleyed back. It was quite a terrible thing. I mean, health research is a real calling among professionals, all right? We're health researchers are supposed to find out the truth about what is harming our people and doing what they can to protect us. And the fact that you know, these very highly trained professionals are fighting, and somebody's not telling the truth after the you know, this terrible meltdown is quite disturbing, Harvey. I mean, you know, we need a shot of honesty here.
Yeah, we do. We'll talk with Joe Mangano of the Radiation Public Health Project. So tell me now, Joe, what about Chernobyl?
Okay, after 1979, Three Mile Island, then 7 years later came Chernobyl. Now, Three Mile was a partial meltdown. About half the core melted, or a
right,
little
now,
more.
Of course, they denied for a number of years. The owners of the nuclear power plant at Three Mile Island denied that there was any melting of fuel at all.
That's right.
And finally, they were able to get, what was it, 3-4 years later, they were able to get a robotic camera in there, and they found out, as you say, that about half the fuel melted.
Yep, and it took about 15 years to move that melted fuel into permanent storage out in Idaho. It's finally all there. As bad as Three Mile was, Chernobyl broke all records for the time. Chernobyl was a complete meltdown. Also, it was a new reactor, like Three Mile Island. It had only been running like two or 3 years.
But not only was Chernobyl a meltdown, it was also an explosion, which the nuclear industry repeatedly said could never happen at a commercial reactor.
Very good point. Yes, it was it was a fire and an explosion, which blew the entire lid off the building. The building was open, and allowing this massive amount of radiation just to go out into the air. Millions of curies, which is a measure of radiation, were released. And once again, as I mentioned, the Fukushima, it got into the air and encircled the northern hemisphere. Obviously, the local area, Belarus and the Ukraine in the former Soviet Union, was hit the worst. But it went all around the globe. Now,
and what were the known health impacts in the local region that might compare to Three Mile Island and Fukushima at Chernobyl?
It's a developing story. It's still developing, Harvey, even almost 30 years after it happens. Once again, we start with the immediate denial. 31 workers who bravely gave their lives to cover the burning reactor died quickly because of acute radiation poisoning. You know, these are heavy.
And then the Soviet government, and I should point this out. I actually spoke in Russia, in Kaliningrad, in 1996, 10 years after the accident, and it was confirmed. When I first saw this number, I thought it was a typo, but the Soviet army sent 800,000 draftees through Chernobyl to clean it up. And when I spoke there 10 years later in Kaliningrad, these guys were really angry. They really reminded me of the Vietnam Vets Against the War. And they were dying in droves. And, of course, nobody's kept good records on them. But so that's an additional impact. But we have had many reports, Joe Mangano, of children of Chernobyl with terrible health problems. So can you talk about that and tell us what we can expect based on that at Fukushima?
Well, let's jump from the denials and from these tiny numbers to reality. And I'll bring you right to late 2009. A book was published by a team of Russian scientists. The lead author was Alexei Yablokov. And they looked at over 5,000 articles and reports, and many of them that had never been seen in public. They're written in the Russian languages. And they found this. First of all, in the first 19 years after Chernobyl, they estimated 985,000 deaths, almost a million deaths worldwide, with the number going up. Number two, and this is maybe just as serious, they found that in the local area, again, the Belarus and the Ukraine and parts of Russia, that before the meltdown, about 20% of children had some sort of health problem. Afterwards, and currently, the number is 80%. So virtually all children...
Whoa, wait. You're saying that 80%, 4 out of every 5 children around Chernobyl has a health problem?
That is correct. That is in the book Chernobyl, Consequences of the Catastrophe, et cetera, published by the New York Academy of Sciences. The lead author is Yablokov.
So 1 out of every 5 children downwind in the downwind area from Chernobyl is healthy.
That's one out of five. That's right. And this is 20 plus years later.
God.
That is.
And what about the thyroid cancer rate? Do you have something
that could go across the
3 reactors?
Yeah, just for example, the child thyroid cancer rate. The accident was in 86. I think that year there were, in Belarus and the Ukraine, there were 2 children diagnosed with the condition. The next year there was like 4. The next year there was like 4. The next year there was 5. Then the next year, 29. And the next year, 57. And the next year, I think, 80-something. And on and on.
So it's epidemic.
It is an epidemic, yes.
And is it continuing to increase in the Chernobyl area?
Oh yes. Oh, that's
it.
That's just the beginning. That's just the beginning. The worst exposures were those who were infants or fetuses at the time of the explosion. But kids after that have not. You know, it's not like they're unexposed. They're still living in the area, and even children of those people who were babies during the time, they're starting to have kids now. Still the thyroid cancer rates among children are quite high. But I can't emphasize enough, Harvey, as bad as the thyroid gland is, that book was it made such an impact on me and all those who read it, because literally every organ system in the human body was affected. There are higher rates of heart disease in the area. There are higher rates of cancer, obviously. There are higher rates of digestive disease, of lung disease, of birth defects, of muscular diseases, of mental disorders, and, you know, of bone diseases. You know, radiation is not just one thing. It's not just a thyroid attacker. It's made up of over 100 chemicals, each of which has a discrete impact on the body, a harmful impact on the body. And the Chernobyl population really is decimated because these rates are very, very high. Many people, even adults, you know, are either dead or disabled, unable to work, unable to take care of a family. It was a disaster. I mean, with a capital D. I think the worst environmental disaster in the world until we know what's going to happen at Fukushima.
Well, where are the numbers coming from that indicate this? I mean, we still have people, you know, in the nuclear industry and at the United Nations denying more than 31 deaths at Chernobyl. So where are the numbers coming from that you're basing what you just said on?
This book has dozens of pages of references of articles and reports that physicians and other researchers in the area and worldwide have done. These are some are official, some did studies on their own, and they published these. Some were published in journals, some were just published as reports, but they are they are good science, and they are consistent. They show that before and after 1986, the world changed in that area.
Is there ongoing research? Are you doing any? Is anybody sustaining new numbers as we go along at Chernobyl?
It's been 5 years, almost 5 years since that book was put out. There have been some more studies, but it's starting to slow down, I would say. As the years go on, it's difficult to say what Chernobyl actually did, you know, 30 and more years later. But again, just to say a million deaths in the first 20 years and a number that is rising.
So Joe, I just got the news that we only have 5 minutes
left.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. No,
you're doing great. So based on what we know from Three Mile Island and Chernobyl, what are we going to expect here at Fukushima?
Many people have made predictions. I have not, but the eventual casualties are going to be very high, on the order of Chernobyl. I would say comparable to Chernobyl. Maybe a little less, maybe somewhat more, but extremely high. And these two meltdowns will have been, I believe, the two worst, and not just nuclear, but environmental catastrophes in human history.
What kind of are there other populations around Fukushima, in addition to the children, that have been studied with any significance?
Not to my knowledge.
The children, the 250,000 children that are being studied, and I assume it's an ongoing study.
Yes.
How do you get access to these numbers? Do they publish the numbers?
They publish the numbers in these brief reports, and they're available on the internet. But that's all.
Well, I'm going to bet you that they disappear. You know, in Pennsylvania, there was a tumor registry.
Yes.
Where they registered the number of tumors in the state.
Yes.
And after Three Mile Island, they discontinued it.
Yes.
And after Fukushima, the American Food and Drug Administration stopped testing fish from the Pacific Ocean for radiation. And, you know, God knows what, well, of course, the Soviet Union disappeared after
right.
Chernobyl, but, there's no international body that's maintaining that's, health records around Chernobyl, is there?
No, not at all. Not at all. In fact, the bodies that should be, like the World Health Organization or United Nations, are still clinging to the minimalism, you know. 9,000 people got cancer from Chernobyl, which is way, way, way underreported.
And of course, the World Health Organization, which the nuclear industry loves to cite, is in the back pocket. They have actually a gag order with the International Atomic Energy Agency. The IAEA censors everything they publish having to do with radiation and health. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's a situation much like, so you have a powerful industry here. It's actually more than an industry. It's also the military. We use atoms for, or maintain atoms for atomic bombs as well, Harvey. Think about for years how the tobacco industry, suppressed research and called research, research that was done, to be not worthy. Finally, in the 1960s, we got the U.S. government.
Right. And I want to mention very quickly, that Alice Stewart in 1956 showed that there was double childhood leukemia based on x-rays to the pregnant women, and it took, 30 years for that to get settled. So we're almost out of time. Joe Mangano, 1 minute and 30 seconds. Tell us, how do people reach you and see these studies? How can they support your work?
Well, thank you. The website that we have is www.radiation.org. The name of the group is Radiation and Public Health Project. We have a contact us section there. We would love to hear from any of your listeners about not just your opinions, but ways in which you can help. We have programs now which citizens can actually help monitor radiation, especially near nuclear plants. That's our latest attempt to involve
citizens. Yes, and what's give the website one more time?
Yeah, it's radiation.org, www.radiation.org.
All right, Joe Mangano, Executive Director of the Radiation Public Health Project. You have also found, and we didn't even get to talk about this, that when a nuclear reactor shuts down, the health of the people in the area improves. So remember that, people, as you're listening to the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. It's been another hour that absolutely flew by. Joe, you've been a great guest. I will continue to have you on, and please continue your incredibly unique and powerful and very important work. Thank you to the crew in New York City. We will be shutting down all the reactors to protect your health as soon as we possibly can. And we'll be back next week with Pete Seeger and Dar Williams and David Burns and the Solartopian Green Power and Wellness Show. We'll see you next week. Thank you so much.
Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.